Okay. Hi. Welcome to Fishing the Web. Make money fast. I'm Mario, and I'm sorry to announce to you that Peter Panther wasn't available, so he got ill, and I have to do his presentation. But I hope it will be no problem for you. Phishing hit us in 2004 as a major phenomenon, and I think it's really an old thing. We all knew it was possible, but it wasn't done until now, and the target was a delicious one. Yeah, and I will try to give you an overview of phishing methods. It's the first part, the major part is which was actually used. This is phishing by email. And the second part will be about phishing by cross-site scripting. And the third, Trojans. If we have time left, we can try a discussion, because I think the major point about phishing is who is to blame. It's really so simple that we have to ask us, whose fault is this? Let me give the introduction into the phishing phenomenon. The word origin is from phishing, of course, and the well-known PH from, like, freaking. The first mentioning of the word was in 1996. It was about stealing AOL login information with faked mails from AOL, and nowadays we use it as a conjunction of password and phishing, so phishing. This is actually a growing development, and if we look for quotes, we can find them from the major security corporations, and this is the year the big fish was landed, Message Labs, or phishing is a new 21st century crime. These are both companies, of course, who offer security products and have an interest to hype the phishing problem. The urgency, I think, becomes clear when we look at the graphs, and the Gartner report stated that there are 1.4 million affected clients, banks and credit card corporations, and there's a $1.2 billion dollar loss, so few milliarden D-mark, only between May 2003 and May 2004 in the U.S. only. Message Labs, they have some means to count emails worldwide, and as you can see here, in mid-2004, we have a rapid rise of phishing emails from maybe below 300,000 to over 5 million phishing emails per month worldwide in October. So here you have the number of mails, and here you have the months. The first target last year was eBay, presumably. And in Germany, it came a little bit later, like mid of the year. Phishing was hitting the Volksbank and the Postbank and the Deutsche Bank, Sparkassen, and on a more broader scale, of course, the Barclays Bank, Citibank, Visa, and PayPal. The worldwide increase, the worldwide intense look that was given to this phishing incidents put a lot of stress onto the police. So a few arrestments are reported. Like this month, five people who were involved in phishing against the Postbank were taken by the police, and the Kölner city newspaper announces that the people should they have phished passwords. So what we can see here, if you look at it, this is a move from fun, from script kiddie action, from, well, you fake mail to get at someone's eBay account, which is annoying, but it's not a total loss. So we have a move here from fun to real monetary aims, to organized structures. And when you look at this, it comes to your mind that the people who were taken by the police are most likely middlemen, so not the people who are actually getting the lot of the money. These might be just the people who transfer the money out of the country. This is because money transfer is monitored. If you transfer money from one country to another, this is very obvious. So you have to take it out of an ATM machine in your country and have to get it to another country by some other means. So money laundry is what we call it. Yeah. So we have a real organized crime, and they are really doing damage. 90% is an estimation. Also, I think it's a Gartner study. Who receive a phishing email, follow the link in the phishing mail to the faked website, and up to 3% of the users who get the mail actually enter their credentials, user password, transfer action number, whatever, into the faked website. So hand out the personal data to the phisher. This is an US survey only. It's called Phishing Attack, Victims, Likely Targets for Identity Theft. And, well, it's hard to transfer these numbers to German situations. I don't think it's actually this large here. And sometimes I wonder how many really are affected. It's hard to say. Let's look at the method A. How do you do phishing? What exactly is phishing from a more technical point of view? Simple. You pretend to be authentic, trick the user into disclosing his secrets, and then you lure him to your fake website, and then he enters his personal data. Or he emails you his personal data. Cross-site scripting is more like you pass him a link and to some website which you control by cross-site scripting by giving JavaScript to the website or something like this in the link that you send him. And so you can make the browser of the user send you the credentials. Method C is very interesting too. Because this scene seems to have a lot in common with the spammer and the worm scene, so the people who sell botnets. A Trojan intercepts communication on your own computer, it's an infection, and sends the data to some phishing host. Phishing by frames, so like loading the page into an iframe which you control, etc., is not covered by this lecture. I think it's too basic. So phishing by email, this is what actually happened. It's really like the famous prank calls, like Captain Crunch exploring the telecommunication companies, or Kevin Mitnick making his way through corporations in America in the 80s and 90s, these typical social engineering thing where you pretend to be some official part, you make it personal for your target, for your victim, like it's really important, and you copy language or design details, you fake formulas. Nowadays you cannot do all this with a simple email, and it's really cheap. You can send a lot of emails for really not much money. So you can just rely on the stupidity of a small part of your target victims. So it just seems to work. If you send it to a few hundred million people, you have a few who reply. And this was the minimum of personal risk. And you don't have to fight with the individual. You just hope someone will be stupid enough. Or maybe someone isn't protected well enough. I don't want to bash them right now because they fall for some phishing scam. Then we have today, we have this phenomenon of this virus-infected PCs, which make up very good spam distributors, zombie armies, botnets. You can buy these things on the black market, on the ERC, or I don't know, and can use them to process your spam mail. And so this is a really cheap method. Okay, maybe it's more interesting to look at it in detail. Here we have the evil attacker with his little Russian horns on his head. And he sends a phishing email with a link to the fake website to the consumer. Here, this nice big blue guy. And he, of course, he enters the data to the fake web page. This could simply be clicking on a link in an HTML email. And he comes to the fake website and enters his personal data, which is transferred to the attacker. And he uses the account data to shift the money to another account on this bank, where one of the middlemen can take the money and get it out of the ATM machine to send it somewhere. I don't know, East money transfer or so. So the bank is only here. Yeah. This is complete fake. So we have information gathering, contact via email, authentication of the user, and then the request to enter your credentials. We intercept the response and misuse identity. Let's look in a bad example. As if you are trying to do phishing, that's not how you do it. This is one of the very early examples, and what's really bad about this example is the wrong language. Yeah, the company name is misspelled. The English is bad. The HTML email is really ugly. Yeah, the misspelling is intended to get it by spam filters. And the simple trick is to show an HTML link which is different from the real location. So you see this link. I hope you can read it. Yeah, I guess so. Postbank.de, whatever. And the real link behind this is postbank.de at then this pipe symbol at some Russian site. This pipe symbol, this was a bug because the Internet Explorer stopped displaying the URL right here. And if you clicked on it, it started opening the URL from right here. So actually the user, if he was using Outlook or something or some Internet Explorer related software, then he had no real means to identify this bad link. Yeah, well, he could have checked the wrong writing. So, okay, here we have this thing, how do you do a good phishing mail? Yeah, you copy the design, you use native language, you state a personal problem with the user's account, you demand immediate response, urgency. You use more Internet Explorer bugs to obfuscate the true URL, the URL of the faked website. You use redirection services. I will explain this on a later slide. And you, of course, you still need user action, yeah, for this to work. So either way, the user has to be stupid enough. Still, even with a good phishing mail. So this is a good example. Here you have the official Postbank logo, some German text, yeah, some nice from, yeah, which sounds official to me. And here you have the link postbank.de, which actually points to a domain name which is quite like the original one. Well, yeah. No, not really. Okay, but you can see the trick. And these are some other examples. Here, for example, the Citibank. These are examples of the faked websites. So you follow the link and you come to this site. Most often it was done by pop-ups in the first days, where you request his ATM PIN number. You need the ATM PIN number of your users every time. This is no pop-up, for example, but this is one. So this is one. Where they just put a pop-up over the original site and they request a transfer number here, and this actually works. So there are a few users who enter their TAN here, they take out the paper from the drawer and copy a TAN into the faked website. This is really great. So you have the data and you can get their money. So obfuscation. You obfuscate the URL. Like with redirection. Redirection is a really easy way to make your fake website work because of their countermeasures. You can just use a redirection service, and if Tripod stops distributing the faked the faked web page, you can switch the redirection to another free web space provider. And here, you have to include some CGI provider. Maybe you don't have there are easier ways to send data than CGI. So this is a means to reach to keep your faked website for a long time on the web without the problem of losing your original site. You can fake the whole website. You can just try to trick the user by blending a pop-up over the website. You may use the hidden location bar in the pop-up so he has no way to see it's the real site. He may have clicked on some SSL dialog before from the service provider site, so he has a feeling the pop-up comes from a trusted site. So you use the original site to gain his trust. And then you can use something like an immediate redirect to the Postbank. And while he is redirected to Postbank and is busy with the SSL dialog, you can go here and open your pop-up window. You give the pop-up window a window ID, so you can find it again in the DTD, in the document tree. And then you can access the form data from this window by this Nagite window ID. So this is technically very easy stuff. I think that's like self HTML first week or so. And it seems to be enough. What can you do as a provider, as a service provider, if you are a bank or so? What can you do against this thing? You can start watching spam. If there's an increase in spam or spam with your company's name in it occurs on the web, then you can react and warn your customers. Or you can watch out for incoming email replies, because a lot of these few million users will write to you and say things like, well, I don't have an account with you, or do you really want to know my TAN? Or so, or you get emails you get replies to emails which you actually never sent out. So you can just watch your MTA if he bounces a lot or so. And you can watch your Apache log, because the attacker's site, the phisher's site, might appear in your referrers. So if people come from strange sites to your company site, then this may be an indication that you're actually being phished. You can, of course, take counteraction. One idea might be to open a browser window, a pop-up window with the same window ID. This might be some first aid help. I open a window with Nagite SID myself, so default browser behavior, if the window already exists, reuse it, and I display a warning, like, make careful, you might be being phished or so. You can try to confuse the phisher by sending bogus data. Maybe this helps you in determining his real location on the globe. And of course, the most important thing, you have to contact WebSpace and connectivity providers. So you have to get his redirection site down. You have to get his fake websites down and his CGI provider down. You can also delegate this. There are commercial services which are dedicated to taking down faked websites. They will write the abuse report for you if you've got the money. Method B. Phishing by cross-site scripting. This might be the next level in phishing. Cross-site scripting is known for years, and many users, but I think it's still maybe possible. That's the next point is, why do we need the next level? Because many users are aware of the problem phishing right now, and they don't respond to spam anymore. They watch out for SSL keys in every pop-up, and they already switched their browser from Internet Explorer to Firefox, Mozilla, or Opera. So you can't get them with Internet Explorer or obfuscation bugs. And so you have to do something other, some other thing. You have to manipulate the original website. Then you can reuse the SSL log, and URL is unmanipulated, and this can be done by cross-site scripting. So this is the attack model. You send email with a prepared link, and this link includes some active content like JavaScript, Visual Basic, or something the consumer's browser will execute if he clicks the link. So he clicks the link, comes to the banking server, and now in the link was some content which the banking server gladly takes and sends back to the user, and the user executes the content which sends its account information to the attacker. The attacker uses this account information to take money from the user. This is very similar to method R, actually. It's the same thing, information gathering, contact, authentication, so misuse of identity. You still require user action. He still has to click the manipulated link or has to go to the manipulated site. Yeah. And you don't need a separate web page anymore. You use the original one. Yeah. You can use malicious code, which you makes the server execute the JavaScript or Visual Basic script or so. And the big pro, of course, is the malicious code is run in the user's browser with the privileges and security guidelines of the original web page. One of two words to cross-site scripting again. Yeah, as we know it for several years, it's placing code in web pages. There's one method where you place a modified link, where you pass a modified link to the user, which might work over a search field. I mean, this is the thing you can test by entering script alert window script as this JavaScript code into the search field. Or you can try to modify the web page itself. this is often done with forums and guest books, where you can use HTML to spice up your message with bold fonts or magenta or I don't know. So you can include some evil scripting section here. I shouldn't click on my slides. And then you can run this JavaScript, which you included at the client side. So you wouldn't include a window alert. You would include something like get URL from my evil.com server with the parameters username, password, transaction number. Yeah, Trojans are really a big problem. That's not really phishing, because it's not luring the user into something. It's just using weaknesses in the user's setup to compromise his PC. And then you, of course, have all the possibilities which worms and viruses built up in the last few months, like searching the registry for codes and strings. This is a similar circle of suspects. They can, again, use middlemen, promise them a share to do the money laundry for them. And this is really increasing. The prominent example is BiSexE. And if some of you have read the paper, Who Wrote Zobig? This is really interesting. Yeah? In this paper, they are doing some forensic research on Zobig, and they come up with this theory that this Russian guy who writes this mass email software also wrote the Zobig virus to open more proxies for his spam software. And it's really, you can imagine that these people might only add one or two more methods in their code, and then they can search your registry for your banking information. I think we have, that's not men in the middle, of course, misuse of identity again. I think we have a different slide. Yeah, the attack model. You infect the user via some unpatched Microsoft bug, yeah, like drag and drop in Internet Explorer, or something else. You install the Trojan into the registry, or autostart, or name it, wherever you install Windows Trojans. And then you just attach to the WinSock or you use the OLE or something and include the browser into your Trojan. Then you can watch HTTPS traffic too, because you're sniffing behind the decryption routine. Then you just look out for TUN, PIN, password, or similar. Or parameters in POST and GET requests if you're using WinSock. Can just send an error 404. So you can take the TUN. It's a one-time key, so you have to deny the TUN to the user. So you can use it yourself at a later time. And from time to time, the Trojan phones home via, I don't know, simple FTP, or maybe a more covert channel, and submit the login data. Yeah, I think I'm a little bit early, but I really would like to know what you think about this. Is this a problem of Microsoft? Is it a problem of the banks? Shouldn't they allow any money transaction over the internet at all? Should we stop eBay now? Or is it just a problem of stupid customers? So there is no doubt that the customers are going to pay. That's your question. Yeah, as far as I can see it, in America, this is the case. This will be the case if there are a lot of hits. Yeah, if there are a lot of compromised accounts, this will be the case. But if only a few ones are hit, like maybe 10 or 12, then the banks will pay to prevent damage to the image. So the more popular this phenomenon gets, the more damage to the user actually will be done, yeah.
Well, I think the banks offer a buggy or at least a vulnerable service to their customers. So they should have an insurance for cases like this.
Yeah. On the other hand, the SSL code isn't broken yet. So and they have this one-time key thing with the TUN number. So is there anything else they could have done? Is there, what else can they do to prevent users from entering data in a fake pop-up?
I think we need to... Sorry? I think we need to look at how serious this really is. And I believe it's really serious. Because from a business point of view, this is undermining one of the channels, one of the few channels that businesses have to talk to their customers, right? If there will be some wide published, they must not be really serious, but they must be seriously published, like in Bild or something in Germany or in the Spiegel, something like that. Of cases where people, you know, clicked on links and then lost the money of to build their house or something, then people will start to distrust email, which is of course fine. We all know that email is, you know, based on protocols that are way too old and way too you know, broken to be trusted. But up until now, people had the same trust into email than they had into the postal system, right? Which is not a good thing to do, but that's how it is, right? And I think now we are paying for it. And I can see only two things happening here. One is email will become simply useless for commercial purposes, right? Deutsche Bank, Postbank, and so on, they cannot use email anymore get in touch with their customers, because customers have no idea how to verify their the origin and things like that. Or we will actually see the widespread use of things like S-MIME, right? And then huge commercial push to use things like S/MIME to educate the end user, the customer, that, you know, only if there's a signature attached to the email, right, and there's a little key in the corner of their window in email 2, then you can trust this email, yeah, and if not, you can't, right? As I said, from a business point of view, I believe this is serious, so there will be something happening soon.
To be honest, I have actually never received an email from a bank. I only get them from this e-commerce shops. So they aren't really using it at all. So I don't really understand how customers can fall for this. But yeah, maybe encryption is the answer here. Yeah.
In my opinion, I think it's a problem of trust. I mean, because the main problem is in SMTP protocol about the fake use of identity through email. But customer cannot trust government, because government don't do the job, you know. Government don't make regulation in US. Then commercial make regulation. So we cannot make sure if we develop a new version of the protocol, our privacy will be protected. So we cannot go forward with that. It's always the same problem. We can have solution, and quite quickly, you know, IoTF can provide a solution about SMTP. But how we can trust government to not threat our privacy after that, you know? And how we can make sure to be protected from government, not from the fisher only, you know? I think the problem is a problem of trust, because today the power is not on the hand of government in US, it's the hand of the economy. And the economy is like an anti-phishing law in US, an anti-spam act, I mean, in US, is not really anti-spam things, you know? Spammer can easily keep going to spam, because commercial want to protect certain way to make a business. So the problem is, in my opinion, is there. Thank you.
Well, another thing, I think basically the architecture of these applications is flawed. I think a web application delivered over a web browser is not a very secure environment, and it's by no means secure enough to use it for vital financial transactions. But it's been sold to people as secure. Most of us would know that they're not secure enough, but my dad wouldn't. So there's something's been sold as secure, which isn't. I think that's the basic flaw of the system, which can be exploited.
Yeah, there are still people out there who tell you Internet Explorer is secure. You just have to install all the patches from Microsoft.
About your question, I think it's not possible to point out the real one who makes the fail, because in one way there's the customer who trusts an email, like he said, like the post, and in the other way there are service providers like eBay who make failures, and there are also software companies like Microsoft who code unusable software or failure software. So I think it's not possible to point out the okay.
Yeah, the true victim.
The guilty one.
Yeah. Well, may I? Okay. First, in addition to all the snide remarks on Internet Explorer, on Mozilla and Firefox, you have this nice thing called Zoo, which effectively is a completely JavaScript programmable user interface, and there's been a nice proof of concept which modeled the complete Mozilla, or was it Firefox, user interface in a completely website-controlled window, including the locked SSL sign. So what's that for a phishing attack? In response to the person before who claimed browser-based interaction with e-commerce site is not nearly secure enough, what alternatives are there?
Yeah.
It has to be a different application or maybe a completely different architecture, I agree, but it's been sold as secure and it isn't.
I think there's a lot of things companies can do to support their customers. Have you ever tried to phone up your bank and try to negotiate their SSL fingerprint with them? No. Why is it so difficult to print it out on the paper that they are giving me with the tons? Why is that so difficult? Have you ever popped up your eBay account? Why do you have to specially click a link for SSL communication? Why is it not default? So there's a lot of security that companies can do to help their users, but they don't interested in it. And as more these phishing attacks appear, they might turn over. So that could be a good sign.
This might be especially true for eBay, for example. They seem to have a rather bad security policy, like we don't tell anyone and we don't fix it, we just forbid it, and so at least that says the press, you know. I can't let this Xul thing stand in the room, I think, because Xul is really so slow. Don't you think they would realize?
Just one thing for the bank communication, there is this German, HBCI standard. Yep. And I think it's not too bad. But the problem is it has to have special application software. It doesn't work within the web browser. But I think it's not a bad way to do communication with the bank.
Very bad way, you say. You want to explain? No, he doesn't. Okay.
Okay. When I just said before, in the end, of course, the customer will pay. I don't think that this is a problem because that is the way civilization is working. That is the way our civilization always was working. When, for example, in the 15th century, when paper money came around, there was a similar problem. Until then, if you were rich, you had gold, and you could protect it with your hands, with your body. The moment you had that paper money, the problem of faking paper money came up. You never had that before. The effect, of course, was that there was a problem in society and someone started to make it an offer to solve the problem. We paid for it. That's part of the luxury we have now, that we can exchange our money wherever we want. That will the same way here. And somebody will come up with a solution for that. Perhaps someone in this room here. And he will make a lot of money with that because it's interesting for the customer to have it. It's interesting for the banks to offer it. And so it's interesting for someone between them to secure it.
Isn't it also a problem that most people are just plainly lazy? Consumers don't want to be educated. They just want to be careless. They just want to have that little mail, and they are just happy to click on the link. That's why, for example, the famous 419 scan, it also worked. You sent them a mail from Africa. You say, give me $1,000, and we'll give you $50,000 back. Well, they buy it. They'll give you the $1,000 cash. So people sometimes really want to be stupid. Is there any way to educate consumers?
They just want to use it. Yeah, they just want to make the banking. They don't want to learn about exchanging SSL fingerprints per telephone or watching out for golden signs in the border of your browser window. I mean, they just want to make money or spend it. Yeah. I mean, and all these numbers and pins, it's really so complicated to remember four-letter number. I mean, even I get confused with four-letter numbers sometimes. There are lots of them which we have to remember. Okay, I think we stop here. The next event will be quite big, and there's already a lot of movement in the room. So thank you all. And well, maybe you find the solution and get rich. Yeah. Was? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. So, of course, we will put the slides online. So if you want to read it up.